Please turn to Luke chapter 18 in your New Testament, and we want to read verse 1 to introduce our lesson. Luke chapter 18 and verse 1. And he, speaking of Jesus, spake a parable unto them to this end, that men ought always to pray and not to faint. In this verse, Luke revealed the lesson that Jesus taught in the parable that follows in verses 2 through 8. It's commonly known as the parable of the unjust judge. And of course, the point is that men ought always to pray and not to faint. That's the lesson that Jesus presented in that particular parable. This morning, we showed how from the Old Testament, Nehemiah lived his life with purpose, and in doing so, he trusted God completely. Nehemiah stands out as a great leader of God's people in the Old Testament. I don't know if he's ever received the credit that he deserves, but he was a great and effective leader of God's people. This evening, we want to concentrate for a little while on how he practiced the lesson that Jesus taught in this parable we just mentioned. Nehemiah, as we examine the book that's named after him, always prayed and he never fainted. So he illustrated in his life the lesson that Jesus taught in that particular parable. Nehemiah was a great servant of God and he served his fellow Jews. The Lord blessed him, but he always prayed and he never fainted. I thought it was interesting just a few moments ago when we were singing that song, Did You Think to Pray? Did you notice how many situations are presented and then the question is asked, Did you think to pray? Well, I believe that song is teaching us that we ought always to pray and not to faint. There are a number of songs in our book that have to do with prayer, and of course, I think it's fitting that we think a great deal right now about prayer with the situation that exists in the world. We need to be praying that this situation in the Ukraine will be resolved peacefully and very soon. I'm concerned about lives that are being lost. I'm concerned about atrocities that are taking place. I don't know what this is going to lead to, but God's people can always pray. Well, we ought to do that, and we ought not to faint. What we want to do is look at the occasions when Nehemiah prayed. I think we'll find that there are about 11 references to Nehemiah's prayers in this particular book. But before we do so, we need to be reminded of the historical setting for the book of Nehemiah. Whenever you study any book of the Bible, especially the historical books in the Old Testament, you need to be aware of the historical setting, the things that were taking place. And then the information that is revealed to us in the Bible will, I think, be a lot more easily understood, and we'll be able to appreciate them to a higher degree. We've mentioned many times that the Jewish people from the southern kingdom spent 70 years in captivity. In 606 BC, King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, took control of Jerusalem. And he did not destroy the city at that time, but he did take control. And the prophet Jeremiah prophesied that this captivity would last for 70 years. And that's exactly how long it lasted. After the 70-year period of captivity came to an end, a man named Cyrus, who was the leader of Persia, conquered the Babylonians who had taken the Jews captive. He conquered the Babylonians, and he allowed the Jews who wanted to go back to their homeland so that they could rebuild the temple. That took place in 536 BC. Then that gives us an idea of when this took place in history. A man named Zerubbabel led a group of Jewish people back to Jerusalem, and they rebuilt the temple. Now, they ran into some opposition, but after some number of years, they were able to rebuild the temple. Now, it did not have the splendor of the temple that Solomon had built, but there was a sense in which it was even more glorious because the presence of God was there. When construction began on the new temple, the younger people were rejoicing, but the ancient men wept because they had seen Solomon's temple, and it must have been a glorious structure. But it had been destroyed by the Babylonians. But it's interesting that there are several different responses to the building of this new temple. But God said that it would be even more glorious than the one that Solomon built, even though it lacked the splendor. Now in 457 BC, Ezra, that we mentioned this morning, led a group of Jews to Jerusalem. And he was responsible for leading the people in making a number of religious reforms. There were some violations of the law of Moses that had to be corrected. There were some practices that need to be reinstituted. And Ezra was instrumental in taking care of these things. But then a few years later, in 444 BC, a man named Nehemiah was serving as the cupbearer to the king in Persia. He had a very high job in the Persian government, being cupbearer to the king. But his brother and some other Jewish men paid him a visit. Now let's turn to Nehemiah chapter 1 and read verses 1 and 2. We're presenting this information so that we'll be aware of the historical setting for the things that we'll be talking about. Nehemiah was in Persia. He was serving as the cupbearer to the king. But he learned some things about the condition of Jerusalem. Remember, several groups of Jews had already gone back to Jerusalem. The temple has been rebuilt. But there were some other things that need to be taken care of. Verses 1 and 2. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month Kislew, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. So he asked about the welfare of his people. This is what he learned. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Nehemiah asked about the state of Jerusalem. That's what he learned. Jerusalem had no wall for protection. It had been torn down years earlier by the Babylonians. It had never been rebuilt. Consequently, the enemies of the Jews were able to afflict them just whenever and however they wanted to. They had no wall to keep them out. Well, that news upset Nehemiah. Look at the first part of verse 4. And it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted. That's the response of Nehemiah to the information that he learned concerning the condition of Jerusalem. He learned that the people there were in great affliction, that there was no wall for protection, and it upset him. So much so that he wept, he mourned. I don't know just how long he mourned, but the Bible says certain days, and he fasted. Now, when someone reacts to news like that, you know the news was not good. But you also know that the person has been personally afflicted or affected by what he's just learned. Well, Nehemiah had a cushion job in Persia, serving as the king's cupbearer. Now, that was a very responsible position, but he had it made. But he knew that his people back in Jerusalem were suffering, and it bothered him. The rest of the book tells about what Nehemiah did about the situation. So in the first few verses, information is given to us to show the situation that existed, and then the rest of the book shows how Nehemiah responded. One thing that he did was pray. He prayed always. As a matter of fact, as we mentioned earlier, his book mentions 11 times when he prayed. Now, sometimes his prayer is recorded. Some prayers are a little longer. Some are very brief. But several times a statement is just made that he prayed. Nehemiah was a man of prayer. He always prayed, and he never fainted. Well, let's look at the prayers that are mentioned in Nehemiah's book. The latter part of verse 4, after saying that Nehemiah responded to what his brother told him by weeping, mourning, and fasting, he also prayed. The latter part of verse 4 says, and prayed before the God of heaven. Well, let's continue. And said, now this is his prayer. This is one of the longer prayers that's actually recorded. I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now day and night, for the children of Israel thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. We have dealt very corruptly against thee, and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments which thou commandest thy servant Moses. Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying, if you transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. But if you turn unto me and keep my commandments and do them, though there were of you cast out unto the uttermost part of the heaven, yet will I gather them from thence and will bring them unto the place that I have chosen to set my name there. Now these are thy servants and thy people, whom thou hast redeemed by thy great power and by thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant and to the prayer of thy servants, who desire to fear thy name and prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. For I was the king's cupbearer. That is a beautiful, eloquent, and powerful prayer. I want you to notice sometime when you have time to read this prayer, just how much Nehemiah included in that prayer. Did you notice he mentioned the fact that his people had sinned against God? That's a mark of a wise leader who will confess his wrongs and not try to hide it. Well, he's asking God for forgiveness, not only for himself, but for a whole nation of people. I don't know if we fully understand exactly what was at stake. God was preserving his people, the tribe of Judah, for a purpose. It had been prophesied through Isaiah that the Messiah would come from the tribe of Judah. For all practical purposes, Israel had been destroyed. The northern kingdom had been taken into captivity, never to rise to power again. God allowed the southern kingdom to exist for a while longer, but because of their sins, he caused them to go into captivity. But that captivity would only last for 70 years. The people would be able to return to their homeland and rebuild the temple, and eventually the Messiah would come. Nehemiah played a very active role in all of this. God's providence was at work. But Nehemiah was very instrumental in keeping the tribe of Judah intact until the Messiah could come. I've often wondered if he was aware of that. I know one thing from some of the statements he made in his prayer. He was very much familiar with the law of Moses because he quoted it. So he knew the scriptures, but I've often wondered if he realized just what an important role he was playing in the coming of the Messiah. You see, each person is important in God's sight. That's one prayer that Nehemiah prayed. He prayed after he learned about the condition of Jerusalem. Look at chapter 2. And verse 4. Remember, he concluded his prayer by asking God to give him mercy in the sight of this man. I believe that's a reference to the king of Persia. The king noticed that there was something different about Nehemiah's countenance. And he asked him why he was so sad. And Nehemiah told him. There must have been a close relationship between Nehemiah and the king, because the king asked, you know, what he wanted to do about the situation. So in verse 4, the king said unto me, "For what dost thou make request?" How did Nehemiah respond? "So I prayed to the God of heaven." He prayed before he asked the king to send him to Jerusalem so that he could rebuild the wall. Do you suppose he prayed for wisdom? Do you suppose he prayed for God's will to be done? Do you suppose that he prayed that the king would have an open mind to his request? We could go on and on talking about things that Nehemiah may have included in his prayer, but the point we want to make right now is the king asked Nehemiah what he wanted to do about the situation in Jerusalem, and Nehemiah first responded by praying to God. Let's look at verses 4 and 5 of chapter 4. Chapter 4, verses 4 and 5. The king gave Nehemiah permission to go to take care of building the wall. He took care of the goods that he would need, all the furnishings and so forth. And after Nehemiah arrived, he challenged the people to build the wall, and they responded in a very good way. They said, "Let us rise up and build." I've often tried to picture Nehemiah's expression when the people responded that way. You know, he had some type of expression. The king already picked up on his sadness from his countenance. I just suspect he was quite happy when the people said, "Let us rise up and build." He challenged them. You know, it had been a long time that wall had just been a pile of debris. Nobody had the gumption to do anything about it. Nehemiah did. He challenged the people, and they responded in a powerful way. But then it wasn't long until the enemies of the Jews began to try to stop the work. And Nehemiah and his fellow Jews were ridiculed. Let's notice how Nehemiah responded to that. Chapter 4, verses 4 and 5. "Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity." He was speaking of the enemies. and cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders." I believe that Nehemiah was upset because of what the enemies were doing, but he did not take matters into his own hand at that point. He prayed to God that God would take care of these people who were acting in such a sinful way. Well, the enemies of the Jews were quite persistent. They didn't give up very easily. They kept on trying to get the work stopped. There was a conspiracy that developed. Let's notice how Nehemiah and his fellow Jews responded. Chapter 4 and verse 9. "Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them." Well, there was a conspiracy that developed according to verse 8. They were going to come and fight against Jerusalem. Now, that's the enemies. So how did Nehemiah and his fellow Jews respond? Well, they first prayed about the situation. Let's look at chapter 5 and verse 19. This is a request that Nehemiah made through prayer. "Think upon me, my God, for good, according to all that I have done for this people." Now, we need to be mindful of what had taken place. There was a problem with some of the wealthier Jews charging high interest rates to their fellow Jews. Nehemiah put an end to that. And after he settled that problem, he prayed. You know, it just seems that there are always some people who will take advantage of others when they're down and out. Many of the poor Jews needed food for their families. They mortgaged their lands. They mortgaged their property. They had to borrow money to buy food. There were some who were well off who took advantage of that situation, and they charged very high interest rates on those loans that they gave. The poor people were not able to pay those high interest rates. Consequently, they went further in the debt. Have you ever seen that happen? Well, I've seen it happen many times. Nehemiah was aware of that situation, and he put an end to it. He called upon the wealthy Jews, the nobles, and so forth. He said, "Stop charging these high interest rates." And they did. They actually helped their fellow Jews. Nehemiah prayed. I just suspect he was grateful that the wealthier Jews responded as they did. You know, there's an observation to be made from that. Think about the early church. The early church had a grand beginning, but it wasn't long until there was an attack made from the outside. The Jewish religious leaders tried to afflict the apostles and others. They weren't successful. The apostles kept on preaching, and the church just kept on growing. Well, the old devil's not going to sit by idly and not try to mess things up. He couldn't attack the church from the outside, so what did he do? He moved to the inside. And we read about the episode that involved Ananias and Sapphira. They were members of the church, and they paid dearly for what they did. I can remember almost like it was yesterday that when I was studying the book of Acts in school, the teacher, who happened to be my favorite teacher, made the observation that if the devil can't accomplish what he wants to do by working from the outside, be assured he's going to turn to the inside. Well, that happened with Nehemiah. The enemies of the Jews were trying to stop the work on the wall. They were not successful. So what happened? There was an internal problem that developed, the wealthier Jews against the poor Jews. Nehemiah settled that issue, and then very wisely he prayed unto God. Chapter 6 and verse 9. The enemies tried to slander Nehemiah. Let's notice how he responded. Chapter 6 and verse 9. For they all made us afraid, saying, their hand shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. Now that's a very short request, but Nehemiah needed strength. And he prayed for a number of things over the time that we're talking about. But right then he needed strength. The enemies had tried to slander him, to make him look bad in the eyes of his fellow Jews. He responded by praying. Well, there was a false prophecy that was made about him. And let's notice how he responded in chapter 6 and verse 14. My God, think thou upon Tobiah and Sanballat according to these their works, and on the prophetess Noadiah, and the rest of the prophets that would have put me in fear. Nehemiah was trusting God to take care of these people who had raised a false prophecy against him. Once again, that was to try to make Nehemiah look bad in the eyes of the people. Because if the Jews began to question their leader, they probably would not want to work. So that's what the enemies were trying to do. They were trying to get the work on the wall stopped. They were not successful. Let's go to chapter 13 and look at verse 14. Now, Nehemiah had to go back to visit the king. He had made an agreement to be gone for a certain length of time, and then he went back to visit the king. After spending some time with the king, he returned to Jerusalem. When he came back, he found some things going on that were just disgusting. One of the priests was involved with one of the enemies of the Jews and had actually allowed him to live in the temple. Now, Nehemiah was a man of action. When he came and found that, he took the guy's stuff and threw it out and chased him out. Kind of reminds me of how the Lord responded when he went into the temple and there were people doing some things in the temple that were not right. Well, Nehemiah ran that man out. He shouldn't have been there. But the Jews let him go in there. That's hard to believe, but that's exactly what took place. After Nehemiah cleansed the temple, let's notice what he did. Chapter 13 and verse 14. Remember me, O my God, concerning this, and wipe not out my good deeds that I have done for the house of my God and for the offices thereof. There were some things taking place on the Sabbath day that should not have been done. The Sabbath was a day of rest, and God commanded in the law of Moses that the Sabbath was to be remembered. Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. It was the seventh day of the week. It was a day set aside for rest. Well, there were some commercial activities taking place. And let's notice how Nehemiah responded. Chapter 13 and verse 22 says, and I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves and that they should come and keep the gates to sanctify the Sabbath day. The gates needed to be shut so that there could be no commerce involved on the Sabbath day. Remember me, O my God, concerning this also, and spare me according to the greatness of thy mercy. Now, Nehemiah was a man of action. He was a strong man, a man of faith. But he was also a man of humility. He remained humble before God. As you examine these requests that he made in his prayers, he maintained a spirit of humility before God. Later on in chapter 13, we find that the Jews had intermarried with foreign women. The law of Moses taught them not to do that. And Nehemiah rebuked the Jews for marrying these foreign women. How did he respond? Look at chapter 13 and verse 29. Remember them, O my God, because they have defiled the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and of the Levites. In verse 30 says, then cleansed I them from all strangers and appointed the wards of the priests and the Levites, every one in his business. Yes, there's a time for prayer, but there's also a time for action. Did you notice that Nehemiah was certainly a man of prayer, but he was also a man of action? He took care of things that needed attention. Well, after cleansing the priests and the Levites, in verse 31, once again he prayed, remember me, O my God, for good. Now let's summarize what we've just noticed. I want to point out the different times when Nehemiah prayed. And we need to remember these because we face similar situations. Or we won't be in the same situation of building a wall around Jerusalem. But in a practical way, we do face similar situations. And we need to remember how Nehemiah responded. Nehemiah prayed after he learned bad news. Do we ever learn bad news? What's the way to react like Nehemiah did? He prayed. Nehemiah prayed before he made decisions. Well, we make decisions, don't we? Do you remember what Jesus did before he selected the disciples? He prayed all night long. Nehemiah prayed when his enemies mistreated him. Rather than try to inflict vengeance himself, he trusted that God would take care of it. Nehemiah prayed for strength when he was going through trials. Well, we need strength, don't we? We need to ask God for it. Nehemiah prayed after taking care of a problem, perhaps offering thanks unto God that situation was resolved. And Nehemiah prayed for God to remember the good that he did. I don't believe that Nehemiah was being proud or selfish in any way when he made this request. Quite often he said, remember me, O God, for what I've done. I don't believe that he was trying to pat himself on the back for what he had done or that he was bragging about what he had done. I don't believe that at all. But I seem to recall a passage in the book of Hebrews that says that God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love. Nehemiah was practicing that principle a long time before it was written in the book of Hebrews. He was asking God to remember the good that he had been able to accomplish. Well, those are some situations when Nehemiah prayed. And perhaps as we think about this man and the way that he responded to different situations, we can better understand why he was such an effective leader of God's people. He always prayed, and he never fainted. Now, Jesus told a parable in Luke chapter 18 in which he emphasized that same lesson. Men ought always to pray and not to faint. I don't believe this lesson could have come at a more appropriate time. We have a difficult situation going on in our world right now. God's people need to pray and not faint. I mentioned this morning that it has been said a picture is worth a thousand words, and I mentioned how I saw a picture of an elderly lady who had taken a rifle, and she apparently was prepared to defend her country. This afternoon, I saw a picture of a little boy who was crying because his mother had to take him and his siblings away from his daddy, who was staying behind to fight. And the little boy was crying. And I thought to myself, an elderly woman ought not to ever have to face a situation like that. And a young child ought not to ever face a situation like that. But because of one ruthless human being, look how many people are suffering. Well, political leaders are going to have to deal with this situation. It can't be put off, and it's not going to be easy. But it needs to be dealt with, because if it isn't, it's going to escalate. Now, I'm not a prophet or the son of a prophet, and I didn't want to get involved in that. But I just thought, if there ever was a time when we need to always pray and not faint, it is today. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world, so said the Apostle John. Well, we need to pray, and we need to pray fervently about this situation. Many lives have already been lost. I'm concerned that more lives will be lost. But I know who's in control, and I'm trusting that God's will be done. Well, we can see that Nehemiah lived his life with purpose. We need to follow his example. He always prayed, and he never fainted. I look forward to one day being able to sit down and talk with that man. It would be interesting to have a conversation with him, wouldn't it? And say, Nehemiah, I appreciate the way that you held up under all the pressure that you faced when you undertook that project of building the wall around Jerusalem. The city had protection. They were protected from their enemies. And God's providence was at work because he was keeping the tribe of Judah intact until eventually, when the time was right, Jesus would come.